Hi, everybody. The Complex PTSD Guy here. I'll start out by saying I'm not a doctor or psychiatrist. I'm just a guy living with complex PTSD, and I'm sharing my own ideas, experiences, and opinions on this podcast. I wanted to discuss a couple of things. First, I had mentioned to you guys some things about a work-related incident where somebody sort of critiqued me, and I ended up finding out that they were actually wrong in critiquing me because what I had said was totally right. And I had kind of wondered, like, was there a jealousy thing going on there coming from them? So I talked about this with my counselor today, and my counselor had a very interesting perspective, which was because I pointed out, it doesn't feel like jealousy is actually the right word. And they pointed out, it sounds more like an insecurity on their part. And I thought, yes, insecurity, that's a better word for it. Because I had told my counselor about some other things that this person had said in the past. So I gave a presentation because one of my fields that I work in is history. And I had given a whole presentation on it was a history conference type thing. And these two really, I would say, big wig historians in the state that I live in, they came and wanted to specifically hear my talk that I gave about this guy. Because it's my perspective, this guy is a really huge deal and he's just so overlooked in history. And they were really interested to hear what I had to say. And this person, the same person that critiqued me this past week at work, where they were wrong and it turned out I was right. Well, back a couple years ago when I gave this talk, that same person said, I'm surprised that they wanted to hear what you had to say. And it was so like blatant, like it was so weird. And I even thought back then, you know, what is that? Like, is this person jealous? Like, it was just a weird thing to say and a weird way to say it. Like, I would never say that to anybody. Like, it was such a strange thing for them to say to me. And so I mentioned this to my counselor today, and I told them, you know, I have a bachelor degree, but this person has a master's and they're really brilliant. They're a very smart, brilliant person. Like, they know way more than I do. I will definitely say that. But one thing I've noticed about them is that they're very, I don't want to use the word envious, but there's somebody else that I work with who has a doctorate, like a PhD in history. And so there's the three of us. And this person who said this to me is very almost like craving the attention of this person with the PhD. So I mentioned that to my counselor. And my counselor said, it sounds like there's maybe an insecurity going on with them. And I never would have thought that. That word did not pop into my brain. And I, as soon as they said it, I thought, ah, that I can see what you mean, insecurity. But I never would have used that word because I knew jealousy didn't seem like the right word. And they pointed out that whenever you're in a certain fields, and a lot of times this can be more in the fields where people have higher degrees, so a medical doctor or a psychologist in a certain field who writes books, or, you know, people who do like all this kind of scholarly work, sometimes there can be this kind of thing where they're so, I don't know if you want to say wrapped up, but they're so wrapped up in their subject matter that if something outside of this, you know, the golden rule, so to speak, pops up and gets attention, it's almost like, well, where is this coming from? You know, in their brain, it's like, where is this coming from? What is this? How does this fit into my equation? Kind of thing. And this could go for just all kinds of fields. any field, any subject matter that they have on a college campus. This could go for any subject matter. But it's particular outlook that a lot of people who are maybe higher up in certain fields have, and they can just kind of be this way to where if there's maybe an argument that's not fitting in with their equation, it, you know, and it might be an argument that they've funneled away from, or when you're higher up in all this kind of education stuff, or, you know, in my world, it's a history world, but when you're higher up in everything, I think a lot of times people who are in that zone, which I don't consider myself in that zone, I'm not in that. These people are, though. And I don't want to be in that zone. I don't want to be in the higher up zone. I like where I am. I don't ever want a master's degree. I don't ever want a doctorate. That's not what I want to do. I have reached my max when it comes to furthering my education in the realm of a university. But, you know, whenever you are in the higher up, I would say, zone, it's almost like you're playing off of all of each other's views. That's the same kind of talking points over and over and over and over and over. And so when I brought up Elihu Wolcott, you know, I brought up this guy who I think I came around about way of knowing Elihu Wolcott. I came to him through the Underground Railroad, and he ran against Lincoln, but it's hardly known, Abraham Lincoln, because more people focus on the other people that Lincoln ran against for Congress at the time. But he just was, this guy, Elihu, was a trailblazer in a lot of ways in the state where Lincoln came from, and particularly for the political party that was Lincoln's party. Elihu was, played significant roles in things that led to that. And again, he's just very overlooked. Most people have never heard of him. But I gave a whole presentation on him, and particularly there were certain connections that these kind of bigwig scholars in my state had to points that I was making in regards to the realms of religion. Excuse me, religion. Because I wrote my paper about, my college paper about religion. And in a lot of ways, religion's not taught in schools, unless you go to like a private religious school. But in a lot of ways, religion is very much overlooked in the realms of history teaching. And see, I wrote about religion, so I'm coming about it to a very different avenue. But I think it's a huge part of history. But anyway, and to make a short story really long, which I just did, this whole thing of insecurity is kind of fascinating to me, because I think my counselor is right. I think that that's what it, I think that's what it was. You know, because I've talked to them before, and I mentioned to you guys, I feel sometimes like my words are pulled apart by this person, like they're critiquing every little thing I say. But this last time they did it, they were wrong. Like they actually were wrong. Like, how do you critique somebody and you're wrong? You know, and I just thought, you know, is that coming from an insecurity on their part? Like, I don't know. But, you know, I wanted to, and this is where I'm going to jump into my other talking point. I wanted to point out that, again, I can't say enough how much that one book I keep talking about so much, which I'm buying, by the way, it's called The Novel Cure. I can't say enough how much it helped. If you are struggling with whatever ailments, and I mean, they even have some of the symptoms of complex PTSD are parts of this book. You know, they list some of the symptoms in there as ailments. I can't say enough how much that book has helped, particularly not just in regards to myself, but, and by the way, it's very important to be very honest when you're looking at this book and you see things and, you know, you're figuring maybe things out about yourself that you didn't know. I mean, this book really, it has helped me so much. I can't stress it enough, but, I was watching a video of somebody, and this was today, and this was someone I've seen before, and this person used to be on a show years ago that I used to watch. It was a reality show, and this person was in an interview with somebody who I watch all the time, and I had always been kind of rubbed the wrong way by this person on this show, and I guess I just always thought that she was just kind of annoying, and I never really could pinpoint it. But after studying that book, the Novel Cure book, and realizing things that I used to do, like making assumptions about things, which was a huge problem for me for years, up until even this year, assumptions, being oblivious, those are two big things, right? Making assumptions and being oblivious. Well, this person did it too. But I never would have noticed it without reading that book. And when I noticed her doing this, I immediately thought, is she going to come across as arrogant? And boy, did she. And see, again, I never would have seen it that way. And what do those three things have in common? Making assumptions, being oblivious, and being arrogant. What they all have in common and what they're all rooted in, and this can be a bitter pill to swallow, it was for me, they're all rooted in ignorance. A person is ignorant if they're doing particularly all three of those things, and she absolutely was, and she looked so like her soul had been zapped, and she was so gripey, and she went on and on and on and on and on and on about just all of this stuff where she's was talking about other people's relationships and making huge assumptions about them just because of how her own relationship went. I mean, huge assumptions. And it came across so arrogant. And see, normally, if I had seen someone like that, my first thought would have been, oh, I bet she's right. It would have been to swim in the toxic with her. It would have been, yeah, I bet she's right. I bet their relationship won't last. Oh yeah, I bet she's right about that. You know, oh, it makes perfect sense. But she was being so not just judgmental, but assuming. And she was so oblivious as to how arrogant she looked. And I kept thinking, she's ignorant. She's ignorant as to how she comes across, and she's ignorant as to how she looks. And I thought, wow, is this how maybe I've been in the past, regarding when I've made assumptions? And again, I can't tell you enough how studying that true crime stuff and seeing how my assumptions so often were wrong, and they were based on narrow-minded thoughts, just narrow-minded thinking, because that's what an assumption is. If you're assuming something, you're being narrow-minded. But I, you know, you're not being open-minded to possibilities if you're assuming things, you know, because things might not be what you think they are. And particularly in regards to a crime, like true crime, you really don't want to assume things because you are cutting out so many options and possibilities by being narrow-minded. And if you're assuming, that's what you're doing. You're missing out on you're almost immediately creating an illogical situation if you're assuming things. You know, you have to kind of work from the evidence and work your way out. And just see it almost the way justice is supposed to be blind. You really need to look at a crime scene blind. You know, you have to almost look at it like, where does this actually lead us next? Where is the proof for this piece of evidence to take us next? What can we work with? Not what can we guess about? What can we work with, right? So, you know, that's why I say that field really helped me stop assuming things. But that book, like I've mentioned, has really helped me see what things are. Making assumptions is arrogant. It's arrogant to just sit there and say things like, oh, this is what will happen with their relationship. Like, wow, you just left out like 5 million possibilities because you narrow-mindedly made an assumption. And it made her look so arrogant and really ignorant. Like, it was shocking at how oblivious she was to how she came across. And I just thought, I know that I've done this before, and it's good to know what it is and why I don't want to do that, because what a turnoff for other people, right? Like, this is someone I don't ever want to see on my TV screen ever again after watching her in this interview, because she came across, I wouldn't even call it a know-it-all or even somebody who thinks they know everything. I would say she came across as ignorant because she's not seeing how narrow-minded she's being. And it was just very interesting to see someone actually do this and literally sit there and think that they're right. And people will just see it my way someday, you know? I was like, wow, this is someone I would never want to be around. But if I hadn't learned this in that book, that novel cure book, I wouldn't have seen it. I would not have seen it for what it really was. I would have just thought, oh, I bet she's right. And it's such a negative, toxic way of thinking about things, to make assumptions about like that. I just wanted to point that out because that happened today, and it was so fascinating to really see someone like that. And I know that I've been that way in the past. So, you know, I have to be honest with myself that was ignorance. You know, and I can think about where it comes from. You know, I know that it's a big part of how I was raised, but it doesn't mean that I have to keep being that way. But I have to know what it is so I can change it. But I never knew that it was ignorance, but that's what it was. So just very eye-opening. I think a lot of people, though, who come from trauma absolutely come from ignorant homes. If you're coming from an abuser, your abuser is probably ignorant as hell. So it makes sense that, you know, we might be that way, and we might not think it's ignorant. We might just be oblivious people who make assumptions. But obliviousness, what is obliviousness? It's ignorance. You're oblivious to what's right in front of your face. Like, you're ignorant, right? So it would make sense, because obliviousness is something I've struggled with for a very long time. And it's almost like Rose on the show The Golden Girls. If you've ever seen The Golden Girls, the best character on any TV show that I could think of, when I was trying to think of an example to give you guys, I thought, oh, Rose, she's absolutely oblivious, right? And she's absolutely ignorant. She's ignorant to what's right in front of her face, because she'll say things like, I mean, you could say something and then she thinks you're talking about something totally different, or she takes your word at face value. Like, you could say something like, I went to a school called the six-step school. Or, you know, one time they said, and then she would say, like, what were the six steps? But the term six steps might mean something absolutely different. But she's actually taking you for your word. Like, one episode, they said something along the lines of, they're talking about a TV show, and she said, I'm going to go watch La Law, where it was actually L.A. Law, like Los Angeles Law, but she called it La Law, you know. And she didn't even know that, like, this dictator's wife was her high school PE teacher, like this, a dictator, and that's very well known around the world. She didn't know that his wife was her PE teacher, really. Like, you know, it's not just being an idiot, but it's obliviousness, it's ignorance, right? And it would also make sense, speaking of being an idiot, it would also make sense that one of my big triggers is feelings of incompetence, because a lot of times I can also feel like an idiot. So if you struggle with obliviousness and making assumptions, which is ignorance, you know, that might play into that quite well, that feeling like an idiot thing. Because if you're struggling with ignorance, you know, from time to time, yeah, you probably do feel like an idiot, or you do struggle with feelings of incompetence. You know, so it's very important. That's why this is such a big deal. That's why I'm rambling about it, because it's such a big deal, because it's, you really have to open your mind and think quite differently. And that's why I stress so much that True Crime did that in that Profiler's channel, thinking more logically, you know, and not making assumptions and not being narrow-minded. It's all connected. But the only thing that really opened me up was the True Crime. You know, learning to actually look at what evidence actually leads, what does it actually lead us to, based on solely the evidence and not a guessing game. That was really what opened me up to seeing just how much I assume things, and how that just doesn't work. That does not work in that field. Because you could assume the wrong things and you might get the wrong person in trouble, right? That happens every day. But I just wanted to share that. And I also wanted to share the thing about the insecurity. And, you know, I wouldn't have seen it that way, but it's... and I'm so glad I talked about it with my counselor. And this is the same counselor, by the way. I only have a few more sessions with them. This is the counselor that I started seeing for multiple things. Depression, drinking, and hopelessness. So I only have like about 6 more sessions with them. And tomorrow, by the way, bright and early, I have a class on calming an overactive mind. It's a continuing education class for massage therapy. It's actually mostly for therapists and psychologists, but if you are getting your continuing education credits for your massage therapy license to be renewed, you can take it as well, because we work with clients, like we work with people. So if somebody's struggling with a lot of anxiety and stress and overthinking, whatever, you know, we have clients like that too. So this applies to us. So it's from 9 to 4. I'll be at a class all day tomorrow on calming an overactive mind. So I'm going to share that with you when I'm done. So I won't be doing any podcasts tomorrow morning or afternoon. I won't do any until I get home in the evening. So I just wanted to share that. This is the Complex PTSD guy signing off.